Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today, we're doing something a little bit different. You've heard us on this platform talking a lot of tech, I can admit that, a lot of investments. We often talk about the economy, we've talked about education, and all types of things. But for today, we're looking at wellness. And I'm going to say wellness, and I'm going to say fitness as well.
Yes.
Inside there, and we're just going to be looking at it. Anyone who spends a little bit of time on social media, especially the Instagrams of this world, will likely have come across a lot of content around the wellness space, usually characterized by well-positioned people in nice positions, either meditating, working out, and also on top of all that, quotes that are usually set against a neutral background,
<It's true.
laughs> with a nice typeface, and a quote that's meant to inspire your life. So today, that's what we're looking at, with a team of entrepreneurs that are in that space. And we're gonna try and get a sense of actually what's happening, because not only have they built a business in South Africa, but, they also have been able to get themselves a presence outside of the country. So there definitely does sound like there's a lot of opportunity out there. And we'll say what we say about what's happening on Instagram, but in the real world, we're here to get a sense of what's going on. So we are joined by Lisa Rally, who is the founder of the Lisa Rally Group, together with Stafford Macy. I believe, this is a married couple.
That's correct. Yeah. Your belief is correct.
Unlikely match.
It's happened a couple of times. We've had over 600 episodes, but every once in a while, we've actually had, couples in business. We always find it, very interesting. So, Lisa, maybe we can just start with you before we get into the, meat and potatoes. What's the elevator pitch on Lisa Rally Group? What's your interest in this fitness and wellness space?
Cool. Well, I've been in this industry since I was 17 years old. So I've known no other, except that my path has kind of been quite windy, always in fitness and wellness.
Yeah.
The path has detoured somewhat as the industry's changed, because it is forever changing. Mm. But pretty much in a nutshell, we offer a very holistic approach to one's well-being, a very curated one, a bespoke one, starting with one's DNA, where we actually test our clientele's DNA so that we can understand them better from the inside out. And then we can give them the right applications, the right kind of methodologies for their best success. So we set them up for a successful approach. So we look at how you should be eating, how you should be exercising, how you should be resting according to one's genetics. So there's no guessing games here in this company. Mm. Everything is around science.
Yeah.
So we take your DNA, and this is on the nutritional side of things, and then we give you the correct eating plan, the correct supplementation program, the correct type of training according to your genetics, so that you know that this is not a blueprint for everyone else. This is bespoke for you, and it's very unique to what your needs are. So on the nutritional side, we have a beautiful brand called Plenty that is nutritionally based. It's all organic, it's all sustainable, and it's around some of my favorite products that I believe every person out there should be consuming on a daily basis, stuff that's easy to incorporate into everyday life that will really improve their quality of life. So Plenty is the one, starting with a medicinal mushroom. Yes, one of those. A beautiful collagen that does not hurt the oceans. It's sustainable, sustainably farmed, as well as a daikon radish, which is one of the first places in South Africa to actually offer such a product, which helps with detoxification of the body, because we are riddled with toxins. So it's like what you put in your body. That's really important, obviously. Mm. Then you have what do you wear on your body when you are working out. So that is Bodykind label. It's an athleisure brand. So that means anything from fitness to living your best life outside of the gym, and leisurely rest periods, which are an important part of the process to getting one's results, is how much you're resting. So Bodykind is what you wear on your body, and we help women and men of all shapes and sizes whilst they're on their wellness journey, because that can take 2 years to achieve. But why wait until you get there to that destination to feel comfortable, supported, powerful, confident? So we help people wear the right stuff whilst they're getting there, and things that accentuate, things that hide, celebrate things that reveal things that just really help support the body in every way possible with beautiful fabrics. A lot of things are actually made in South Africa using local artists to curate and design the prints. So we always looking for new artists up and coming, and we take those designs, we digitize them, we print them on fabrics in South Africa, manufacture here locally, and sometimes we actually export, which is quite exciting. And then lastly, it's what you do with your body. Things that are kind to your body are what we kind of advocate for, and that is a low impact form of exercise, whether on the ground, but predominantly it's on a mini trampoline. It's called a rebounder. So it's a beautiful, unstable surface that makes all the little muscle fibers activate. It burns more calories than just standing on the ground. It's more fun. It's low on impact. So if you have an injury, you can do it. Little kids love it. From 3 to 93 years old can do it and participate. It's a lot of the time music based, but lots of different styles of exercise on the rebounder. And it's really good for a few things. Number one is it builds bone density and muscle mass, improves lean muscle, which is so important for boosting one's metabolic rate. It's amazing at boosting one's cardiovascular fitness because there's so many muscles working at the same time. So it's good bang for your buck. It's good. It's time efficient for those people that are really busy. And of course, probably the most important is what it does for your lymphatic system, because it gets rid of toxins that are just accumulating and making us all ill. So it's what you do with your body. It's what you put on your body. It's what you put in your body, and we kind of close the circle. We augment this all with beautiful webinars that are free live classes every day of the week that we've been offering since COVID. We have 10,000 people online now that are bouncing away with us all over the world, and we don't charge anything for that. That's one of the things we can maybe talk about. And we also do things like podcasts and lots of educational aspects so that we can really empower our clients, teach them how to fish when it comes to all things health related, and set them up for life. We don't want to have the same clients a year from now, 5 years from now. We want them to move on, pay it forward in their communities and their families and their organizations, and have lots of new clients coming through the system the whole time, because that's when we know we've succeeded. When we actually have educated people and inspired them and given them the tools to survive without us, so we can move on to the next people, because there's only so many hours in your day. You can't help everybody forever.
Just by the way, this is a very long elevator ride.
Okay. Yeah. This was a 1,052-story building.
So for me, just I came into the business around the COVID time as an investor. I love the business because of what the business, I could see the testimonies, the changing of lives all the time. And that was very inspiring. I come from a technology background. I'm known as somebody that's quite prominent in the technology space. And for me, this business was a very beautiful business because I think during COVID, something profound happened. We saw so much death and we saw so much, people affected by that virus that it gave everyone an understanding of how important health is and wellness is. And I think the prevailing thing that's existed beyond COVID, and it will, I think, will continue to sit in our psyches for the next couple more decades, is that health and wellness. Nobody has turned away from it. In fact, it's one of the fastest growing industries in the entire world outside of the Mag 7 tech players in the world. The industries that are growing, if you take a look at compound annual growth rates, if you take a look at adoption rates, etc., health, fitness, and wellness is top of mind for everyone. A business CEO, stats are showing, if you have a corporation, you have a healthy corporation, you exemplify health and wellness, productivity goes up, performance goes up, etc. goes up. So it is organizational, it's family based, it's individual based. And I think it's because of COVID. So the elevator pitch for this business is, it is something grown in South Africa by an entrepreneur that has lots of experience in this space. And it is data driven, and it's the entire life cycle of somebody, from what you do with your body physically to what you put on your body and what you put inside your body. That is what I believe is the full circle. You address those three circles, and it's quite astonishing. And I think since what the business went through from a growth perspective was extraordinary, it went from people to 10,000, in less than 2 years. It's an extraordinary
number. And continue to have the same people online, which is quite amazing, because there was a lot of online fitness, let's be honest. During COVID, every second person was going onto Instagram and doing a live workout. There were lots of people doing boot camp, Pilates, yoga, you name it, and have fizzled out since then. Very few studios actually offer an online option, for kind of participating in a workout class. But ours has continued to stay the same for the last 2.5 years since we kind of got out of COVID. Our online numbers haven't dropped.
Who's your right now? who is actually making use of the platform and the product?
Let me tackle that one. I think let's take it back from a business perspective. This is a business audience.
Yeah.
So from a business audience perspective, it's what's our target market? What's our sweet spot? I would say our sweet spot for our business is female, average age 45.
Okay.
I mean, right now, that's where average the business is. No, I would say average age 45. And the reason I say that is it's perimenopause, menopausal, and postmenopausal women. It's women that have, the kids have graduated from university.
Yeah.
They have disposable income. They want their bodies back.
Yeah.
And they're going through a life change. Yeah. And so the sweet spot for this business that I've seen as an investor in it.
I think that audience definitely, but the audience of women that are in their mid-30s that are having babies, and they realize that they can't go to the gym anymore because what do you do with your kids? You can't have your nanny there 24/7 and you want to be able to get your body back. So you've lost your kind of your identity and your body's just not the same.
Yeah.
You would love to be able to do something at home where your baby's around you. Your little kids are running around. They're doing their homework. The dogs are there. You don't have to leave. The food is in the oven. So I find that actually a lot of our clients start from the age of 35 to 60, like that age group. I think it's a little younger than Steph's talking about.
Yeah.
Yes, we have a big demographic of ladies that are in their 45, 50, 55, 60.
Yeah.
And now it's even going beyond that to your Bounty Silver clients who are all sort of in their 70s because people are living longer than ever.
Did you just say Bounty Silver?
It's called Bounty's the brand, the name of the rebounding business. But Silver is your silverhead folk, those that have gray hair. We're just being polite.
Yeah. The reason I was asking that is because sometimes on any business journey, there tends to be a difference between who you target versus who actually takes on your products or your platform.
Yeah.
So I'd be keen to get an answer on
More mature audience. Definitely not a lot of people in their
20s. Is that what you were going for in the beginning?
So let's talk strategically. So there's this element of it being what we are and where we are. And then from a strategic perspective, I think when you take a look at the various demographics, you know, for me, the sweet spot is the 45-year-old female, right? So for me, as a business person, when I look at the business, that is optimal. And that market, in the female market, that seems to be the sweet spot for us, right? So Lisa can kind of toggle that number by 5 years to 7 years, but it is women that are post kids looking to get their bodies back.
Yeah.
That is it's a big market for us, but the market extends into children. You know, right now, kids have never been more sedentary. We have ADHD problems with the kids, obese kids. Yeah. I mean, if you take a look at what's going on right now, you know, human beings.
Playing outside is not a thing.
It's not a thing anymore. Safety, big cities, et cetera. So rebounding, this little thing that you can put in front of the TV and they can bounce on it. Mm. It's extraordinary, the health benefits of this modality, right? Then you take a look at folks that are older, sure. Injured folks. We're also taking a look at certain people that have medical conditions. So cancer patients, lymphedema patients,
injuries,
recovering from injuries, sportsmen that are looking for a modality that they can cross train, a low impact modality. Mm. So if I'm cycling, how can I make my cycling better? If the weather's bad outside, I don't want to get onto a stationary bike inside. What can I do? Great modality. If I'm a swimmer, if I'm a runner, there's science behind this. And the beauty of this particular exercise modality, which is kind of the center of the business. So if you take a look at our business, there's lots of target demographics.
Yeah.
But if you take a look at our core is a particular modality called rebounding. Mm. And that modality was invented by NASA. So, you know, NASA invented this thing for the astronaut program. Because when astronauts float around in zero gravity, there's three things that happen to them. They lose muscle atrophy.
Yeah, atrophy, yeah.
Number two is they lose bone skeletal strength. Mm. So their bone density diminishes significantly. And the third thing is their lymphatic systems are ossified. So, you know, when you have a stagnant lymphatic system, it means your body can't detox. Your body can't get rid of toxins. If you take a look at the astronauts that were in the International Space Station that were left there by Biden, that Musk went to go fetch with Trump now. If you take a look at their conditions, I mean, they really suffered when they landed back home.
They aged a lot.
Their lymphatic systems were a big problem. They couldn't stand. It wasn't just muscle atrophy. It was bones. It was lymph. It was all of that. So NASA invented this exercise for recovery. Preparation and recovery for the astronauts.
Work against gravity.
Work against gravity. So the opposite happens when you're on this platform. So when you're bouncing up and down, you're exerting multiple forces of gravity. So your body acts in the exact opposite that it does in zero gravity.
Mm.
You're actuating more muscle tissue. You're building bones.
Your lymph ducts open and closed.
Your lymph ducts open and closed. So the science behind the modality is quite extraordinary. It is a very unique modality because it is so transversal. We say it's from 3 to 103, 93. See, we keep bumping into Asia, you and I today.
We are 10 years different, you know what I mean? So maybe that's why.
Maybe that's why. But I mean, if you take a look at the demographics, the modality is transversal. But if you're to ask us the other aspects of the business, they grew organically from the exercise modality.
Actually, on that point, I was actually going to get a sense of when you started out, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was the first thing you started out with?
Okay, well, the business existed a long time ago.
Yeah.
So in 2000, 99, 2000, I kind of started it.
Yeah.
Okay, and it was around exercise first and foremost. Then some nutrition came into it.
Yeah.
Then I started doing a lot of television work, and I specialized in really overweight clientele. So it was like the fatties and monies out there. We used to like tease them about it. But they would come to me because I did The Biggest Loser South Africa.
Yeah.
So that was like how I was kind of positioned, was that Lisa takes on the hard cases.
Yeah.
You know, those that will not go to the gym. They're super shy. They've got all kinds of sort of lifestyle related diseases, trauma that they'd been through to get them into that state in the first place. So I was doing this sort of transformation. So I became like the transformation queen. So I had to learn a lot about human behavior. I had to learn a lot about nutrition and kind of also go close the circle, make sure it was a holistic approach so that I could understand this human being and where their voids were. Why were they filling voids with food? Why do they keep sabotaging their efforts? So it first and foremost started around exercise. Then it kind of worked around the whole human being and making sure that I had all the other aspects in play so that I could help somebody really achieve success in their life, because there's no point just saying exercise more and they come to me 5 days a week to exercise, but you know, they're sabotaging things at home and they're eating all the wrong stuff and they're not sleeping well and their gut's broken and stressing too much, and there was no point. It kind of felt like I was just putting a plaster on it and I wasn't actually fixing the cause, you know? So I studied all those things over the years and I opened up a wellness clinic, and I did that for quite a long time, actually, in KZN. I had a few of them running at the same time, and people would fly in from Joburg for 3 months and come and do my wellness programs after that TV show, just to learn. We did lectures, we did massage, we trained twice a day, I fed them, we did veggie juices, we did so many seminars, and we empowered them. So when they came back to Joburg, to the concrete jungle, they would know what to do in their own home environments. So it kind of was, I really wanted to help people holistically, okay? But the problem with having a business that was based in Durban was the four walls. It was limiting for me. I needed to be able to help people around the world.
Yeah,
so that's why it went digital.
Because I was about to say one of the biggest problems that
scaling
selling scaling
time
is what you call this. How do you scale yourself?
Yes, 100%.
Right, because that's an easy model to scale, but you.
Well,
as
I actually
Lisa
have a course.
Scale,
I've actually been teaching my rebounding course now for a while. So if you had to fast forward beyond owning the weight loss and wellness clinic and then doing all the TV shows and getting onto radio and getting onto television and growing my own personal brand, then I became a mom. And then I used rebounding to get back into shape because I was really broken after my pregnancy. I had a sore back, my pelvis, everything was wrong. I needed a low impact form of exercise. So I adopted this rebounding, and I realized quickly that there was so little out there that one could follow. You might have a rebounder, which was probably really not a great one. And then the workouts and programs that you could do online were minimal. So I saw the gap very quickly and I was like, wow, I can't actually believe that there's so little online for people to do once they have this cool thing. So I started researching, studying, developing my own sort of programs around all my years of knowledge, and I started teaching classes, and that would be my R&D, you know, what did people like, what didn't they like, and I started doing that for quite a while until I started recording my own programs that could be digitized and now spread across the world.
Okay.
And so we have a massive platform called Life of Bounty that has, it's probably the biggest one in the world.
It is the biggest.
We've been growing it for years.
World, yeah.
And it's programs and it's workouts and it's for kiddies to beginners to injured to HIIT programs for guys, like you name it, it has all been shot beautifully, and it's all on this platform for subscription, for residual, you know, annuity income, which is important.
Wonderful. I enjoy when we arrive at the point of how do you make the money?
Yeah. And I must just tell you, so what I was saying now is like, how do you duplicate me? And I have over the years identified individuals that have this sort of like, you know, this sparkle that I'm looking for, that X factor, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I have groomed them, I have trained them, and they are now part of our big HQ. We have a Bounty HQ, which goes live around the world 3 times a day.
Yeah.
And they are part of our team, and we have develop programs with them, and they all specialize in different styles of rebounding. So they all have their own unique following. They have a very unique way of rebounding. That's obviously all part of our principles, but I've taught them using my international recognized course that I put together over the years. And I've also trained about 600 instructors globally now. So, and those instructors have qualified, and a lot of them have opened up studios, hundreds of them around the world, that carry the Bounty brand.
Okay, because I'm enjoying this, because one of the problems that we see, especially with people that create marketplace businesses, is disintermediation, right?
Yes.
You go through all this work creating a standard of some sort. We've even asked, we've even engaged with Aisha Pando on this platform, you know, around something like a Sweep South, to say you train people, you get them to a certain level. But once a person is able to do all that and they go into someone's home, it's very easy for someone to then take that relationship off platform and almost cut you out. But it almost sounds as if you're encouraging that type of thing.
I definitely encourage it. I mean, I want people to go out there and start their own whatever studio, rebounding studio, call it whatever. But what we've worked really hard in educating people over the last 7 years, creating a brand that stands for really high quality and high value, so that when they have a timetable and they're publishing it out, they might be offering 5 or 6 other styles of classes. But when it comes to the rebounding classes, it's called Bounty classes. So Bounty is like Zumba. It's a trademark name. You have to train to become, to understand what it is, and all the sequences and the routines and the philosophies. And then to maintain it, you have to upskill and up-level yourself all the time to keep your accreditation that you're a Bounty certified instructor.
Yeah.
So that Bounty has weight. It actually has clout out there, and people respect it. Like, did you train through Bounty or did you do a Fong Kong course?
Yeah.
You know, that it actually has credibility. And that's what we've been really striving for over the years, is making sure that there's lots and lots of studios out there that carry the Bounty brand, and that they are leveling up and upskilling all the time. So we do that all the time. And we have academy members that are within, like, our VIP trainers, our sort of our master trainers. And we have a huge expectation of them. And we give them all kinds of perks to keep them in the academy, all things like upskilling and a whole big online portal where they can level up every month and learn new things, to discounts, to affiliation codes where they can earn money online for sending people our way. I mean, we look after our academy members and make sure that they are the VIPs, the echelon of all the instructors that I've trained in the world. It's a non-compulsory thing. You pay for it every month. And we make sure that we treat you like gold, and that you have a reason to renew your subscription
I think it's a risk. I think that risk exists if you don't innovate as a business. So if you stagnate, and Lisa only did Bounty rebounding, and that was it, it was rebounding, I do think someone else would emerge. But I think the business has grown. So if you take a look at what those academy members, those Bounty instructors do, they have discount codes. They get things at a particular, you know, they get a code, you become, and then the person can purchase a rebounder utilizing that code, and they can get a discount, and they get a rebate associated with that particular product.
Like an affiliate.
Like an affiliation. Okay, yeah. So there's an affiliation aspect. So the business has grown up to augment its services with, you know, product, digital services, you know, athleisure, supplementation, etc. Now, all of those have grown and grown and grown because we had to innovate. We had to add more to the story. And every addition creates a dimension of revenue opportunity for the person within the ecosystem. So to leave the ecosystem, it's not beneficial. Right? Because you're going to stagnate. So at HQ, that's what we're constantly thinking about all the time. What's the next supplement? What's the next piece of athleisure?
Accessory.
The rebounding is also something that there's some elements in the business that's quite unique. You know, one aspect that I've noticed with Lisa's business is it employs predominantly females. Its entire ecosystem is females. We make the equipment in South Africa, and the people that make the equipment, every single one of the businesses are African female-led businesses.
Yeah.
It's quite extraordinary. The artists that do the prints on the clothing for Bodykind are female artists. The people that make and manufacture that clothing in South Africa are female-operated and owned businesses.
Yeah.
Then you've got the Bounty Academy. Over 600, 700 women have been trained up. Women that have generated an income from this. So they go to Brits and they set up a rebounding studio over there. We market the hell out of them. We launch it with them. We make noise about them. The clients attend. And guess what? That lady now has a supplemental form of income. Or it becomes the predominant form of income. We've seen that. And that's maybe a single parent, a single mom. And this is a lifeline for her. So we're stepping into a world right now where we're looking at financing. You know, because the equipment, if you buy 10 of them.
Actually, wait. Let's slow it down before we get to the financing piece. Maybe you guys can talk to us about, because Stafford had already started going down that road. Talk to us about the economics of a business like this, right? On the revenue side of things, Lisa's spoken about, the subscription, piece of things. You've spoken about, the affiliate side of things. You've also spoken about, you've got the products, those are going, at least you can sell on a per unit basis.
Right.
You've also got the educational content, all of that stuff. For a business like this, because this is one of those businesses where I'm sure you almost have to look at everything on a blended level.
Yeah. It's very difficult to do a valuation on this business. We've had investment into the business, but it was debt equity, right? So we haven't given up equity, but we took on some debt and we went through the process. And it was merely to get working capital into the business. And that working capital exercise, that due diligence was quite intense. Why? Because it's a very mature business.
And they're disparate incomes.
But very disparate income streams. And every single one of the income streams are an industry. Yeah. I mean, athleisure, that's an industry. Just if Lisa just went and did athleisure, I mean, the ARRs in that industry are enormous, right? Yeah. The margins in there are significant, but you've got to be real careful. Because the risks associated with just that sector, returns, product blemishes, samples that you're writing off, the marketing associated with it. So the way you measure your true net in that particular industry for that particular, for Bodykind, it's very different from the way Bounty is done. And Bounty is even more complicated if you're looking at it from an accounting perspective. Because why? It's got physical hardware, right? It's got a lot of R&D burn. It's stock. So from a stock management perspective, it's very, it's as tricky as Bodykind is. Bodykind's challenge.
Are you sitting on a lot of stock?
So what we try and do here and there. So the question is, we always trying to orchestrate our stock. So we are just in time business all the time. So we run systems. And what we had to do with Lisa's business, and this is kind of my world. Her world is everything that she describes. I'm the dark side of the moon, right? So my dark side of the moon is the system. So the ERP system that we had to implement, the integration with the accounting system, and making sure that we're always checking stock. And then because it's a complicated business, make it even more complicated. So it's got equipment. It's got digital services on top of that equipment where the margins are way different from the physical equipment.
Yeah.
It's got athleisure, which has its own stock management issues, right? Seasonality. Things go out of print. Things go out of style. There's that issue over there. Then you move over to supplementation. And in supplementation and nutrition, it's FMCG. This industry deals with, we've got expiry dates on products.
Yeah.
So how do you do it?
Product shortages.
So supply chain management and overall stock control in this business is an art. And that impacts margins. That impacts what we do as a business from a marketing perspective. And it's quite a complicated animal in that regard. So the Lisa Riley Group having these three disparate brands underneath it, from an accounting perspective and evaluation perspective, it's a tricky one. It is a tricky one.
And we've also got franchises.
Yeah.
So we've got one in Cape Town, we've got one in Mayersdale, and we've got a list that we're running. So we did those two with friendlies, people we knew in the company, like that have been with us for a long time that wanted to open up a branch to really just do some testing to see like if this is a viable side of the business. How do we scale it? If we have 100 franchisees, because we had a couple hundred applications when we launched it for people to own a franchise all over the world. And we're like, how are we going to do this with manpower? Mm. Checking in on them and making sure the quality was up where we needed to be. It's a lot. So we've learned a lot from the two that we have, and we will start going on a franchisee quest again.
I want to add a little bit more to color to what I was saying there. So the big challenge is obviously the back office orchestration of a business that's complicated. And in South Africa, it's tough. You know, when the ports don't work properly, when the rails don't work properly, when trucks get looted on the N3.
Yeah.
These are things, when you're running a business in South Africa, it's extraordinarily difficult. Yeah. You're always thinking about every single dimension of risk. That's on the supply chain side. On the consumer side, you know, when the lights go out, people don't train. Right, they just, their psyches change.
Except for on a rebound, because you don't need power. Okay.
But I mean, you got to think about water. When the water cuts out, you know, people are prone to be less well, right? People are prone to, they won't go exercise because they don't have shower. So you're constantly dealing as a business all the time with the shift shaking terrestrial challenges. And that, from a business ownership perspective, it's tough. And that's why we have decided as a business, like a year or more ago, to diversify outside of South Africa, because you have to. So we established Bounty UK. So we have a business in the United Kingdom, and that's a rebounding business that's connected to our digital platform, Life of Bounty, with a subscription service associated with it in pounds. You need to have that. We also have Bounty USA.
It's always good to have a rand hedge in this.
Yes, you have to have a rand hedge, And we'll soon be accepting Bitcoin in the company too, because I'm a big Bitcoiner. So
you had to destroy that.
We had to throw that up. We can't do any interview without saying Bitcoin. But so as a business in South Africa, It's complex, and being as we are, I would say, a medium enterprise.
Yeah,
we're not a small business anymore.
Yeah,
I mean, we're turning over. You know, we're in the range right now, on projected to be about 45 million a year.
Yeah,
I mean, this is not a small business.
Yeah,
but it's got all the startup elements all the time. So we've had to, and when, you know, I tell you something, when Eskom had its load shedding problems.
Yeah,
wow, it was tough for us. When people can't go online. They can't go shop. Yeah. So when you have load shedding for, you know, stage six, you don't understand the impact that that has on a business like ourselves.
Because in that small moment of time when you've got power, you're quickly charging your devices, you're quickly cooking dinner, you're washing things. Yeah. You're not thinking about shopping online. Yeah. You know, so it has a massive effect.
And that's why we went and opened up a retail store. So, and we didn't understand, Lisa and I had no idea what retail meant. And
actually, before I touch on the retail, right? Because I need, there's a lot that's going on.
We feel like that all the time. What are you talking about?
You mentioned just now that you guys have gone out to raise some money, and it was for working capital, right?
That's right, yeah.
And you've just described how complex the three elements of the business are, right? When I was just reading up a bit before today, you know, on what you guys are doing, there aren't a lot of comparables that I could think of, right? On the equipment side of things, maybe you could use Peloton as type of...
I'm flattered.
Yeah, no, because you've got a piece of equipment, you've got a subscription.
By the way, it's not
on top
great,
of,
and I don't perspective.
No, no, it's not what you call... And that's why I said it's the thing that came to my mind immediately. And obviously, that's a business that went through the hype cycle in COVID, and... You know, its valuations have not been able to withstand the post-COVID world and all of that stuff. But you seem to be in a different, you know, element. So two things. Firstly, the working capital.
Yes.
Where does that go? Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. And how are you, because clearly that's the need in the business is the working capital. Mm-hmm. And then the second piece is, at what point do you then decide, okay, fine, maybe we can go, I don't know, because I like the fact that you no longer call yourselves a startup. I think that's really great, right? So, which means you could literally go to like a Series A or a B, right?
You could. Let me talk to that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, the first part of the question was the working capital. So when we looked at where we were, supply chain became a big issue. The business is profitable. The business washes its face. The business has huge upside. If you take a look at every metric, just on a 80,000 foot level, fitness and wellness, one of the fastest growing industries in the world. In South Africa, growing middle class, economically speaking, they were health aware. We're one of the most obese, one of the most diabetes, you know. So if you take a look at all, it's a massive opportunity, health and wellness in South Africa. Globally, even bigger, but definitely here in South Africa. So when we started expanding out, our challenge was, how do we deal with all the logistical issues? Now, the logistical issues were, the reason we required working capital was we could stock up. We could, it was almost, I would say, we were creating a strategic reserve set of assets.
Mm. Also, you get preferential treatment when you're importing, if your orders are bigger.
Yeah, MOQ. I was going to go there. The MOQ. Okay. So one is the logistical aspect. The other one is when you're dealing with suppliers where we are right now. So if you take a look at our client base is about 75,000 people a month in and around us all the time. Our total client base is just north of 100,000 clients. So that's quite a significant base in South Africa. Mm. If you take a look at the net worth of people that we target, we're in the upper LSMs, right? So our basket size—
That 100,000, is that just in South Africa?
Mm. Just South Africa, okay, yeah. Cool, yeah. Yeah, just in South Africa. And that's an LSM that's the top, you know, in the top two layers of the LSM pyramid. So, and that's not a big market. So we almost 10% of the applicable market in South Africa to buy basket sizes of 5,000 to 8,000 rand, we 10%, 15% into that LSM. Mm-hmm. So that's quite a significant market share if you take a look at the customers that we have. Mm-hmm. So, but what we needed to do was ensure that we weren't going to collapse under the weight of our own success. And this is, I've been in the startup game for a long time. I've invested in technology startups. The challenge is not a dying business. That's easier to handle. The challenge is actually when a business goes into hyperscaling. Mm. That's when it's a whole lot more difficult. Why? Because you got to think about systems. Mm. You got to think about orchestration. You got to think about SOPs, you know, standard operating procedures. You got to think about governance. You got to think about HR and employees. You got to think about all of that. But the key thing that comes transversely across that is working capital. Mm. Because you want to make sure you always have products. Our big challenge is we can't usually keep up with the demand. When Lisa launches something, she's got at least 10,000 people that want it right away.
Yeah.
And so it creates a scarcity element, which is valuable in any business. And we've learned to kind of deal with that, where we will go to a Chinese supplier and we'll buy only the MOQ. So the minimum order quantity for that specific SKU.
Yeah.
Why? Because we won't bulk up. So our working capital is not bulk up capital. Mm. It's to make sure that we have the reserves addressed for any eventuality, i.e. A strike of the truckers. The port doesn't have people coming. You know, the ships can't dock
at the port. Massive delays
at the port. Massive delay. Tariffs.
Also, South African suppliers, like a lot of our manufacturers, they can't make in bulk yet. So we make very specialized like equipment, and a lot of it's handmade. So when we put in an order for thousands, they freak out. So we have to be careful. We have to put an order for hundreds of that, and then down the line, another 100 of that. And, you know, like they just can't cope. So whenever things are locally made, it becomes a big challenge for us because those specific CMT factories, they just don't have the scalability we need. So some things that we have to bring in because they do have the scalability over there, and other things we can do here, just trying not to literally crush our suppliers.
Yeah.
You know, as you're talking, I'm reminded of something that I watched over the weekend. Of course, you know, on the day that we are recording, we are in the first week of, you know, Trump tariffs and all of that stuff.
Mm.
And I saw this one thing where a guy is an American guy. He was trying to explain how hard it is to manufacture something in the US versus something in the and he makes hot sauce, and he was like, I've got these specialized little bottles, and the cost of making a mold in South Africa just for not South Africa the cost of making a mold for this bottle in the US is I think he said 800% higher in the US than it is for him.
Gotta sell a lot of sauce to pay that back.
That's
a bit impossible sometimes.
So when we're inventing, I mean, that is so from a working capital perspective, you do, so what we do is we'll do the mold in South Africa.
Yeah.
And I mean, literally, you spot on when you're talking about this, right? Mm. So we'll do the mold here, and we'll actually export the mold. So we'll take the mold to China.
Oh.
And the Chinese will take
and
a look.
And then they'll manufacture.
What the Chinese are really bad at is origination.
You know, that's funny.
Yeah.
This is literally exactly what this person was saying. They're like, once you get to a final mold, everything is smooth from there. Yeah. But creating the mold, though it's cheaper in China, the process of finalizing a mold in China is tough.
Yeah, the work, the work ethic, the language, they just they are brilliant at taking anything and making a million of it. Perfectly. But instantiating that very first derivative to make a million of that phase, you have to do it on the ground.
So well, South Africans are industrious. Like we make a plan and we're great with plastic, we're great with steel. So like, and we work with a lot of plastic and steel. So we make a lot of stuff here and then we'll just say, okay, now copy.
Now copy. Now don't do it. And they can do it at scale and they've got industrial, you know, ways of doing it.
But so, it is frustrating because, you know, you would love to support more local. A lot of the time I'm like, oh my gosh, why can't we just make that here? And then you go through the whole process of trying to find the right fabric and the right needles and the right machinery and the right whatever, CMT, and you get to a lot of like T-junctions and you're like, oh my gosh, okay, we can't make that here yet. I don't think it's, we won't be able to make it here forever. I just think that we haven't quite caught up to the technology that they have. They've got the most incredible fabric technology that we just don't have here, and choice of fabrics.
And
we have problem with fabrics in South Africa. Like we just don't have choice. You go to like any of these huge fabric warehouses and they do not have the same compression, fitness fabric, breathability.
Grammage.
Yeah, that they have. It's it's insane.
Yeah, no, I'm still waiting for to confirm this, but I remember reading a certain report around not this specifically, but fast fashion, right? We've seen the rise of the likes of Shein and others. And I was reading somewhere, and once again, I still need to go and substantiate this, that they have manufacturing facilities on ships.
Yes.
You know, so that
by the time they get to the destination, they're ready.
So that's another challenge.
It's amazing.
So that's another challenge for a business in South Africa. And I'll speak because people listening to this are business people and probably entrepreneurs. The big challenge is making sure that a Chinese person doesn't take your stuff and then make it. I mean, Temu and Shein has done two things for our business. It's made us think a lot more carefully about what we make. It's made sure that we localize it. So it's very much a South African brand, print, feel, look. They can't replicate that. Our culture, they can't replicate, right?
Maybe you could buy a pair of hand weights online, but you're not going to get the ones that are ergonomically tested by me for rebounding and then printed in South Africa using South African artist prints on the neoprene and sewn my hand. So you're never going to get that. So if you want to go and support those big industries and buy the cheapy stuff that you don't even know what it's made out of, it could be completely full of microplastics and whatever, and it's going to be cheaper, sure, but it doesn't tell a story. You're not supporting local. It's not going to be as beautiful. It's not going to last as long. The attention to detail is not there. So do you want your product to last you 3 months or 3 years? So we look at quality all the time. We tell a story. We weave the story into all the products. We talk
and
about
it's a big
the why.
Burden. It's a big burden on our shoulders, right? Because we can't just make stuff. We mainly need, it needs to be qualitative. It needs to be beautiful. It needs to be unique. And that's what consumers are looking. And they, you know what? Lisa says it there. The word that's so key is the story. Consumers don't buy products and services. They buy people and they buy stories. So the Lisa story they've bought into. So Lisa is our mascot for all the brands. But we had to take the brands out of Lisa because it was first Lisa Rally only.
That was a big burden for me. Yeah. Like a lot of pressure to bear. You know what I mean? It's it just everything's me and my name is everywhere. And I needed, especially on the Bounty side, to be able to have these other instructors that I've handpicked, I've trained, I've, you know, skilled up, I've believed in, I've whatever supported, and to be able to have them stand alone so that I can like now go away and in a couple of days' time we're going to the States to do a complete recce of the wellness industry in the United States. And to be able to, that the business continues because the founder needs to go and upskill and bring new ideas back.
But there was also risk. I didn't like the risk aspect.
Yeah, but I was like, I cannot have all that pressure on my shoulders. There are big influencers out there, like for instance, Tracy Anderson and, you know, those kinds of people that are massive, and it's only them. That's it. Like what happens when they're not here anymore? Like where does their legacy live?
But I mean, as an investor looking at the business, so when I looked at the business, I mean, there was that. But I said the predominant driver of getting the brands out of Lisa was me, because I was putting millions into the business, literally millions into the business. And what I didn't want was Lisa Rally, because when Lisa Rally tweets one thing wrong, the whole business tanks, right? So what we did is
Key
we tried to
risk.
We did risk it. We took the brands out of her. She's still the founder. She's still the storyteller. She's still the person that is the driver, and the she signs off everything. But at the end of the day, Bounty stands as a P&L by itself. Mm. Bodykind stands measured by itself. Plenty stands by itself. We needed that to happen. And I think in the future, when you're talking about capital raising and all of that.
Yeah, because I was actually going to ask you that. That was the second piece, is this a business that is suited, you know, to VC, you know, capital?
I think so. So just one element, I just want to close off on that last point that I think is very, very important. One is localizing, making it local on all the stories. The other side is understanding scarcity and marketing scarcity and monetizing scarcity. Mm. If you've got someone that looks like this, Lisa, that can drive demand, and you can shut off the taps. You got kind of the LVMH thing going on, right?
I was about to say Hermes.
Yeah, the Hermes. And so you can get one, but there's only one of them. Mm. And we've got a lot of that going on in our business. And it helps us from a working capital perspective, because what we go off and do is we don't go buy bulk. We run out.
And then sit with lots of stock. Yeah,
we run out. And when we run out, we run out. We used to have this panic before, like, we run out, go buy more stock of something. Mm. But then you're sitting with that stock for 12 months, 6. What we decided was we run out.
So that's it. The run.
That's it.
When we say we've got limited edition, we've got a winter range launching tomorrow night, like a big event. Yeah. And, you know, when that stock's done, it's done. We move already on to autumn, you know, move on to spring and summer. Like, we already move on. Sorry, if you didn't get that beautiful puffer jacket you wanted, it's gone. We're not going to go order more, make more. Yeah. That's it.
And you know what? For entrepreneurs listening and business people listening, I think when you have bulk, then you're like the other brands, like any retail brand, big retail brand. But when you ask, these are the things that allow you to monetize with margin is when you have scarcity. And we're starting to understand how to orchestrate scarcity, manage scarcity, market scarcity in the business now. Yeah. I mean, this is probably 1 year's worth of scarcity that the working capital allowed us. Now, where do we go with this? Lisa's probably got a very different answer to me, right? As an investor looking at the business, I think we are the business at event that looks very similar to what could happen to us is when Mr. Price bought Yuppie Chef. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew Andrew and the guys at Yuppie Chef, and when they got acquired by Mr. Price, he was this big retailer and he was this niche high value player, and it was a segment that they weren't attacking. It was an LSM that they weren't addressing. Mm-hmm. And I think what Yuppie Chef gave them was that more diversity in their portfolio. Well, it diversified their portfolio and it brought in Yuppie Chef. And I think something like that lays ahead for us. I think we're a business that's profitable. I don't want to do another capital raise. I do think I'm pushing her right now to do another, but I think if we do another raise, I think it'll be a debt raise, just because the business is profitable enough to manage the hit on or the burn associated with the debt. So, and that's the debt, Outface Capital that provided us the debt. As a company that wants to put more money in the business. They love the business.
Because I was going to ask, is it in terms of raising, in terms of raising debt, is it banks? Is it private equity? Like who's coming to the
Outface table? Capital came in. More like a private equity play.
Okay.
So, you know, they're looking at the business and you're putting warrants down. They're looking at your stock. And so we are very stock rich business. So we got millions and millions in stock. And that is very equitable for them from a risk perspective, putting down X amount. They want to put in more. And we are considering that.
To grow into new territories.
Not so much that. not new territories. No, to expand our retail presence. Right now, we went into retail.
Yeah.
And like we said, we never understood retail. We had no idea what we were going to get. But retail became, for me, a thing where, do I have a storeroom?
Yeah.
And I put my products in there and I put in a website attached to it? Or do I put, for me, a retail store is a showroom where you're paying for the rent and your customers can walk around in your store, in your storage facility.
A lot of our stuff is experiential. You know, clients come in, they want to touch the fabric, feel the fit, and then once they've done it once, they're very happy to buy online after that. They want to come and try the 20 different rebounders that we have in stock. They want to, this one's for me. Do I need a handlebar? Don't I? What equipment do I need? Speak to somebody that understands, you know, the brand. Be able to taste the products. Be able to get a proper bra fitting. We have the best sports bra for women in South Africa. It is amazing. It's totally adjustable. It is incredible. And they want to come try it on so that they can make sure they get the right fit, because it's underwear. Mm. You know, you can't return that stuff. So if the store is an experiential space, so staff wants us to open in Cape Town. We have, in fact, for the second year running, our Cape Town database, client base, is now superseded our Gauteng one for the second year running. But we don't actually have a big physical presence or store in Cape Town. So we are looking at spaces, you know, where do we go? Because Cape Town seems to be this like this bit of an anomaly for us, because there's so many different areas that you need to be all at once. No one from one side is going to go to the other side. So it almost feels like you need to open up three or four at the same time that are smaller, but they're kind of servicing that specific target market and area because people just don't travel. The traffic is horrendous.
Actually, I wanted to ask Lisa something very quickly. Because of that experiential factor in the business, right? When you are obviously talking to someone like your investor husband here or external investors or someone who comes in and says, okay, fine, maybe there's some debt we can extend, that type of thing. How do you get them to understand what you're doing, right? Is a PowerPoint enough? Is a deck enough? Or do they have to?
No, they come to the classes. You want to invest in my business? Come to my class.
honestly, that's what actually happened with Outfest Capital. They came to the studio.
Come to the store. They went to come the and store. Meet the staff. They came to the HQ head office. They came and did a class. We had many meetings with them. They really touched and felt our products. They bought into the
story.
They
walked into our store.
The ethos, the vibe, the clients. They were invested in the story, not just the spreadsheets. It was definitely the story.
And that was more interesting for us, was that they didn't just buy into, it wasn't just a bunch of analysts in the room.
Like a bank.
Sucking in all the data and then walking out going, yay, nay. What they felt was there's something here and there's something that can grow. We want to be part of the story. And they've been very supportive of that. A bank would never do that.
Outfest does it a lot, though, with their investments. Yeah. They do buy into stories. People with brilliant, brilliant stories, entrepreneurs.
Yeah. I mean, they bought into the Bombanani, the Melville restaurant, and that's been expanded. So
and
coming.
Tang as well.
Yeah, Tang. So I think if you take a look at where we are from a business perspective, we're at a very critical juncture right now. Right. So we're going to the USA to spend 4 weeks there right now. And the reason we're spending 4 weeks is to scope out establishing quite a significant presence there. Big fat studio, big fat store. We're looking at Orlando. We're looking at the East Coast. We're going to go scope that out. So, you know, I lived there for quite a few years. Lisa was there recently. We went together and we looked at it. The market seems ready for a product like us. So we feel that we're big enough to go punch in our weight class over there. The next 4 weeks, we're going to go determine that. And then we're going to come back and we're going to make a decision. And this is a pivotal decision for us from a business perspective. Do we expand further in South Africa from a physical presence perspective? Or do we go and establish a presence physically in the United States? What will be the return on effort for a business like ourselves? Now, if you take a look at tariffs and you take a look at the economic situation in South Africa, you take a look at the relationship that we have with the USA, this is worrying for us. You know, this affects us. And it will affect our decision. But we're right there right now. So it's one of two things. We're either going to take the time and the effort and we're going to expand in the United States. And that expansion will outstrip the South African the status very, very quickly from a pure economical perspective. We know that. The numbers on paper show it. If that happens, we could then turn around and then further invest into South Africa, utilizing US dollars, which means we just get better bang for our buck versus using rands to expand. If we don't do the USA, I think we'll expand our physical presence quite significantly. I'd like to have another, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 HQ type studios with stores attached to them in Cape Town,
Pretoria,
East Pretoria. Those are the two areas right now that we, if it wasn't for this demand in the USA, we'd have expanded into that already. And I think that's the question. Do we do debt for that?
Yeah.
Or do I raise, you know, do I burn on the equity and create a cap table? But it just means we have people around the table that we need to be accountable to. Whereas right now, if I'm paying off my debt with Outfest and I'm honest and the business running, I'm okay. But, you know, to create more shareholders in the room, I don't know. We're too entrepreneurial. It feels like maybe we're too entrepreneurial for that.
I don't like working for anybody.
You know, I was about to say
yeah,
that.
I'm a creative.
I'm not the biggest expert, so I'm not going to count this as investment advice. But right. I think debt is probably the better way.
It allows you to have a lot of freedom and flexibility.
Better way to go.
And also, you're replicating a model that's proven itself. But if Fushini Group came along, TFG. If Woolworths came along, if Mr. Price came around and knocked on our doors? Because another way to look at it is three options. Number one, go to the USA, expand, and come back into South Africa with dollars. Number two is expand and more methodically, no risk. Anything goes wrong, you're here in South Africa, you can deal with it, and you expand organically in that way. Number three is it's maybe a combination of number two, where we start talking to the people that are pinging us.
Can take you national in their source.
You guys are facing, it's a district, you guys are, it's a distribution question plan.
So a big retailer.
You don't always necessarily need a huge store to yourself. You need a presence within a store so people can touch and feel. But you have to align yourself with the right brand that has the same vision and values.
So we've been spoken to, but it didn't feel right at the time. And, you know, that is something that we need to consider right now too, is maybe we do start speaking to the bigger retailers, because a Bounty Plenty Body Kind section inside of
Woolworths.
At Home, Woolworths, you name a brand that has multiple presences, that will give us touch points that we need right now. And rapidly, and it could scale us quite quickly. So yeah, it's interesting to be where we are right now as a business.
I can imagine. This has been a really fascinating discussion just the business of fitness and wellness. And I want to touch on two things before I let you guys go. Believe it or not, we've been talking for almost an hour now.
We can talk.
Firstly, compare and contrast for me the US versus the UK, right? From the outside, we might look at them as being both, you know, developed first world countries. You've obviously got your target LSMs that you're looking for. But culturally, they are different markets and all that.
I've got a slight, we've got a bit of an experience now in both, because we opened up Bounty UK, which was more of an online presence with some physical product. We've just recently got a ton of new physical product into our UK e-store, our website. So we've kind of had a little bit of trial and error with the UK. I think my own mom lives there six months of the year. Okay. So like, and a lot of friends have lived there. So I hear a lot of honest feedback, not just from our customers and peers and things, but also from friends and family that have lived there. I don't think the grass is as green on that side as people kind of make it out to be. It's all lovely pounds and everything. But from what we can kind of understand is that people are struggling as much as they are here. A lot of people have two or three jobs to get by. They don't have a lot of disposable time or income on their hands. And now we're talking the middle to upper class. You're not talking upper class here, because there's lots of those as well there. But our target market in the UK is definitely middle to upper class. And we get the feeling that people don't have the extra income to purchase products of our quality on a whim. Not like in America, when we've had a business there for a little while now, and the more we go there, the more we talk to people, especially in that Floridian state, they have extra income at the end of the month. When you talk to them about a $500 or $600 rebounder, they don't even flinch. In the UK, you talk about a £350 rebounder and people have to go and think about it.
Okay.
So it's actually incredibly different. You think of it as these like superpowers, right? And these like places that have these very strong currencies and they must kind of be the same. But there is a very different culture, a different fitness culture, a different sort of spending culture. The USA citizen, they spend. They have surplus money. They lack fitness and wellness. They want to buy what's new. They use it. And they definitely have disposable income. So for us, natural growth would kind of lean more towards the USA, to a market that's ready for it, that's really into fitness and health, very kind of future focused when it comes to all things that are new, trying new things, and just having that money to be able to kind of not splurge, but invest in wellness. They don't even think about it. They want to have what's new. And for them, it's not a huge, big sort of purchase.
I think it's two different economies. And I think the UK is on a decline at the moment. In fact, it's stagnated. I mean, Brexit just knocked it at its knees and it's quiet. And there's a lot of capital flight happening in the UK right now. I mean, the number of millionaires leaving the UK is quite extraordinary right now. They've got economical challenges, and a business like ours feels those very quickly. I do think it's a great economy still for us, for many reasons. I think weather is a big issue over there. And any place that has bad weather, people need an exercise modality that's practical, that they can do everywhere. So
that's at home, that you can do once the kids go to bed at 8, because they go to bed very late. I used to live in the UK as well. So like, you know, people are going to bed at 11 at night. They're not shy to do a workout at 8 o'clock at night, 8:30. In fact, most of the studios in the UK have a class at 7:30 or 8 p.m. because of, you know, trains and if they finish work late and shifts and all sorts of things. So an at-home workout, we would have like almost a different target market. So in the UK, it would be people that are working out at home that needed rebounders, a subscription and some accessories so that they could work out early, before work or after. So it would be an at-home online target market. Mm. Whereas in the US, it'd be a bit of that, but it'd be actually be more studio focused, athleisure focused, and people going into the studios because they just didn't have the same challenges that the UK people have. So everyone in the States has a car. Like everyone, they drive everywhere. Everyone parks straight outside the center. People don't walk. They don't get public transport as much. Mm. Not in Florida, where we would probably be based. Everybody has a car. It's the cheapest thing ever to buy yourself a car. Why not have one?
Look, one economy is more frugal. The other one is more consumptive, right? It's a consumerism-orientated economy, the United States. I lived there for 7.5 years. They've spent, right? And they depend on that spend. Mm. And the entire world depends on Americans consuming their products, right? So on a macro scale, that's the atmosphere over there. Now, I don't think it's either or for us. We will continue to have Bounty UK. We will continue to push Bounty UK. But would we have our entire range of products there? And would it not yet. And also pounds, when you're on a Rand budget and you're flying in a pound world, that's a very different ROI, right? Mm-hmm. When you sell something there, it's great. But when you're generating business and you're doing business development over there, it's very expensive, right? Mm-hmm. We do have people on the ground over there, a team over there, and they're doing a great job. So we'll continue there. The USA is a different market, but it's not, you can't say USA and UK. When you approach America, from a South African's perspective, you approach one state. Because one state's GDP is bigger than Africa's GDP. Yeah. So you've got to be real careful. You eat the elephant piece by piece over there. You do not go to America to launch a business in America. You don't do it that way. The UK, you can do that. It's small. The media is, I mean, it's a small country. It's an island.
Similar population.
Yeah, similar population. So you can totally target them. But in the United States, you go to Florida. And you stick in Florida. And the Floridians know who you are. And you build your business there for the next 10 years. Mm. Because it's that big. Because the demand is that big. So from a pure economic perspective, we're not after America. Mm. You know, we're after a state or two.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all we want. And Florida seems to be a state that's very, you know, the weather, the disposable income there. I mean, the wealthiest of the wealthy lives in Florida.
Mm. Boca Raton.
But that's exactly
that's where we want to open in Boca.
That's where we're going. Yeah. So that feels like the market that we should be in. And whenever we go there, we've gone there a couple of times now, and they cannot match Lisa. What we're seeing on the ground. So we've gone to studios and we've bounced around in there, and it was just like the quality that we're delivering to South Africans here. Completely, they don't know rebounding in the United States like we do. So we're very excited about that, that we can take something of this quality.
They do. There are some of them that do, because I follow them. You know, I'm a fan, but we do it differently. We've got a lot to offer that they do not offer. So I do think that we'd be quite competitive in that space, because we are so strong at what we do. Like, we're the best in South Africa, for sure, in Africa, UK for sure. And in America, there's a lot of people that I think are great, but I do think we could disrupt. And that's, I think, a very strong place to
be. Just by the way, side note, I was talking to a couple of people that I know. I mean, I spoke to one guy and he's willing to put like $10 million into the business. I mean, they're just their capital, the ability to throw capital at something.
It's a little ridiculous. So when we were there for quite a few weeks, end of last year, when was it? August, September last year. Everything is full. The restaurants are full. The gyms are full. There's queues everywhere. You go to Disney, it's full. People are shopping. They've got huge arms full of shopping bags. It is a consumptive economy, and everybody just has extra money at the end of the month. They have money to play around, to go to classes at $50 a class, one class in the state, R1,000. Obviously, I'm converting, but $50 is not a joke. When you look at what a Big Mac costs or a cup of coffee, $50 for one workout class for 45 minutes. Yeah. I mean, have 50 people in your class.
We're talking about Florida.
Like, if you
went to Mississippi or
LA and California and New York City, they're all the same. And we're flying into New York and going to quite a few studios whilst we're in New York. And then we're doing the same in Orlando, Miami, that whole strip, Florida. It's all like that.
Yeah.
It's expensive.
And that's actually, when you said Florida, what came first to my mind was Boca Raton, obviously there's Miami, there's Fort Lauderdale, all of those places, but especially Boca Raton, because I've seen the houses in that place and I completely understand. Last point, I think, for today.
Just by the way, we disclosed a lot of stuff in this podcast. Well, you've drawn out a lot of secrets here.
What do you call this? In the world of investments, people find it hard to take a business that has different cores and move forward in their head. They always try to whittle it down to like one thing and one idea. And the comparable I can make is with Telkom, because I cover technology, media, and telecoms. Right. Telkom faces an issue sometimes in the market where, unlike MTN and Vodacom, they aren't seen as a pure mobile operator because they have a business called BCX, which is a systems integrator. They have a fixed line company, and then they have a mobile. So sometimes when the market is trying to value them or to compare them, they struggle. Like, what is this thing? Like,
well, it's PE ratios. So if you look at the PE ratio of a mobile company versus the PE ratio of a systems integration, a PE ratio of fixed line infrastructure, the PEs are very, very different. And what normally boards will do, they'll take a look at the ancillary PEs and try and discard them, do partnerships around them, shed them, and then focus on the core PE. We see this in AI with Bitcoin miners. Bitcoin miners right now in the world are big companies, Riot, Marathon. The problem with Bitcoin miners, their PE ratio sit at 67.
Yeah.
But as soon as they do something with AI compute, so they open up their data centers to get compute in there for AI, the PE ratio on compute for AI sits at 20 to 27 times, you know, earnings. So where are they going to go? So what they're doing now is they're diversifying into that. Now, this business, it's a very good question. What are the
people? Trying to say, what would we, how would we consolidate it and define it as not, if it were one thing?
Not consolidate per se, but
simplify it.
But when you are, I guess the question I'm trying to ask is, when you're going out into the market, right, whether, because obviously you guys, it's mainly debt, right, that you're looking after. Someone, there's a debt analyst somewhere, a credit analyst probably, who's sitting there like, okay. There's some nutrition, there's some what, like,
Well, do you know what the sales pitch is to him?
Okay.
It's, I've de-risked you. I'm in high lucrative environments in each one.
Yeah.
And each one's growing.
Yeah.
And if one falls over, relative to the, well, we're not raising 500 million rand here. You know, we're raising single digit millions.
Yeah.
So these are not big numbers, you know. So if I was in the 50 million raise or the 100 million raise, I think that becomes more of an academic exercise. Then you're really looking at the levers in the spreadsheet to make sure it works. But where we are right now, The business is profitable. It's got good turnover. It's got an amazing loyal client base. Our returning customers are extraordinary. Our testimonies are amazing. Our product sets are amazing. So when we're raising right now, we're raising to open up a store. So we're raising like, you know, 4 or 5 million rand.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the X amount of lease payments, X amount of stock's going to go in there. And literally the stock that you're putting in place relative to the debt that you're taking out, there's a 1-to-1 ratio. If we're to liquidate the stock at net cost, it would pretty much, you know, pay off the remaining loan. So we're really working on simple semantics here. You know, I really don't want to get into potential earning ratios relative to stock and all of that.
Because I guess where I was going is to get a sense of when people are evaluating your business, even though, like you said, you're still in the single digits and all of that stuff, how has the market been reading, you know, the Lisa Rally Group? How are they receiving it?
Yeah.
Do they, because what tends to happen when you're looking at, you know, blended PEs, all of that stuff is people will take the one,
right?
And then they'll be like, okay, fine. We think this is the main thing. Whatever money I'm about to give, I think this is the main thing that's going to allow me to get my money back. So that was the part I was just trying to understand to say.
It actually spreads the risk out of it, because whatever territory you go into will go in strong with one of the three pillars. Mm. You know, not every territory will adopt all three pillars. Mm. Like, for instance, Cape Town, we might do it differently to how we did in Joburg because the city's different.
Yeah.
We'll do it differently in the UK. We definitely won't be launching our supplement range anytime soon in the UK because they have really strict laws and export is expensive. So we've got three very strong pillars, and in some territories we'll have all three, and in some we'll have one, we'll have two of them. Mm. So we'll be able to go even within South Africa. If we had to launch, say, something in George, we may only go in with one pillar. We might not go in with athleisure because it's not the demographic that's going to adopt it. So we're like, why go in there and fail? So I think we would do our market research with every territory. And the fact that we have different arms to fall back on, I think, is our strength, and not just like kind of focusing on one thing the whole time. I think it's just about market research and who's your clientele in that city or in that town or whatever. And then you give them what they want. You don't go and put things there that you want.
The thing is though, if we, and I hear the question from another perspective, I think that's operating the business as it is and executing against it. But the other aspect is if someone comes in trying to acquire this business at some point in time, you know, what valuation do you put on the table relative to it? And I think that's where it'll be a kind of a yuppie chef deal. And the yuppie chef deal wasn't you buying this segment of their pots and pans business or this segment of their appliance business. You're buying into the story that went within that business. And I think whoever came along would have to buy into the story because we wouldn't sell and leave. We would be in this thing for the duration of it, right? So, and if you take a look at what the products and services are, they do, you got to put a human being in the middle of that entire business plan, right? So if I want to change your life, where would I begin? And this is what happens. People either come in wanting a piece of athleisure and they enter our business through that funnel. So they're already training, et cetera. And then we catch them with, because they like a piece of legging or they want a sports bra, they love it. And then they find out, oh, what's this rebounding thing? Oh, wow, that's really cool. So I'm CrossFitting, so I can use this on my active rest days. Yeah, you can. Oh, wow, okay, cool. Then they bounce and they bounce and bounce. They follow us on social media. Then they find out about Plenty's collagen. Or they find out about Plenty's
DNA.
The DNA test.
That can actually be better than I am now. Well, let me do my DNA.
You see, so if you take a look at the funnels, BK has a funnel, Body Kind. Plenty has a funnel. So someone is looking for a sleep remedy. You know, they want the lion's mane, mushrooms, etc. They want the best product. We have the best in there. They come into that and then they go, wait a minute, exercise can also help my sleep. Yes. DNA test. And then ultimately, as they change, they want to look good. They wear BK.
Because you ask any of our clients and you say, where did you start? And they're like, oh, I came to a class. My friend brought me into a class and I was hooked from the get-go. Now I have 5 rebounders at home. I've done my DNA. I've done this. Or you'll chat to somebody else and they had like serious health issues and they needed to start with the DNA. They heard about us. So they started there. And then, you know, they went to the dietitian and they heard about low impact exercise because they have high inflammation. Rebounding is one of those amazing low impact forms of exercise. They started rebounding. And then they needed the shoe and then they needed the bra and then they so every one of our clients, if you had to ask them, where did you start in the Alara group, they'll be like, I started here with athleisure, or I started with DNA, or I started with Plenty, or I started with Bounty. And very soon, within a few months, they're exposed to all the other aspects of the business and they start adopting different aspects, things that suit them. And everybody's journey within our company is very different and very unique.
But you know what's
the key
beautiful
is to be able to help somebody holistically.
That's
at the
it.
End you know,
and then what's beautiful are the testimonies. Why I love this business and why I, outside of my other interests, I sit on boards, I'm involved in other things. What I love about this business, as much as technology amazes me and Bitcoin I love, etc., this changes lives. This is when you're an executive and you're pushing, and you don't listen to your health, you're going to come and speak to us, right? We love clients that don't listen to us. They don't listen until they get the phone call that says, hey, that lump in your breast is this, or that thing in your back is this. Or that now means this. And guess what? Now you pre-diabetic, or now you, guess what? You have diabetes. So your lifestyle, and then you come to us and you spend hundreds of thousands of rand trying to fix yourself.
Or you realize that you can perform better. Like, we have a lot of high performing people that make a huge difference in the world. They are doing some crazy stuff in South Africa. But to perform at that level all the time, you need to be exercising in a certain way, supplementing appropriately, managing one's stress. How do you hack your sleep routine? These individuals are coming to us to like hack their lives so that they can continue to do what they do, which is changing the world, for a lot longer. And to be doing it more effectively. So it's not just about disease prevention. It's about performance.
Yeah.
So we speak to a lot of individuals who are like, make me Hulk. Make me like Iron Man. I need to be able to perform at that level without getting sick. And what they're doing in SA and in the world is like amazing. We have to help them stay at that level or outperform themselves for as long as possible. Like, we owe it to the world, because right. otherwise that person won't last much longer.
But as South Africans, if you take a look at our target market, I mean, the terrestrial challenges that everyone has, the health impacts that load shedding has on you, the health impacts that water cutoffs have on you.
When the instability of South Africa right now.
The instability, the stresses around us, the economic, the political, like the GNU ones, these headlines all the time, what we don't realize was what it does in our bodies. Our bodies are being attacked by this subliminally, subconsciously, and that leads to so many health issues. We launched a podcast some time ago, and the last episode, which we recorded this. No, that's an episode.
Okay.
We launched the podcast some time ago, but we launched an episode on cortisol and just making people understand the stress hormone. And what we spoke about there is how South Africans are highly stressed, highly, highly stressed. Our headlines, our experiences in our homes, safety alone, getting out your door, you know, watching your back all the time. Those things lead to enormous health issues. Therefore, clients resonate when we speak to them. The business resonates with people. And it's not, we're not pitching a yellow bottle with a pink label. That's not it. We're pitching, do you want to change your life? Do you really want to change your life? And what we've seen over and over, in 3 months, 4 months, people walk in to our store in Nicolway. They walk back in 3 months later. We don't recognize them. We don't recognize their physical appearance. We don't recognize their personas because they're different. I mean, Lisa, this happened a couple of times. One incident where a guy bought flowers for Lisa with a card. And I was like, hey, dude, what's going on? And he was like, no. This is for Lisa because I have my wife back. The woman that I married when I was 19, we are both in our early 50s now. She's back. She has zest for life. She's not depressed. She wants to do stuff. We're doing more. And I want to do this too. So a lot of couples start doing it together. So these are the stories that this business generates and the impacts that it has. And it's not a rands and cents thing for Lisa. I know Lisa doesn't look at the numbers. She looks at the numbers on a day-to-day basis, but the broad-based numbers she doesn't really care about. I think if the business went half the size and it was smaller, she wouldn't care. Because at the end of the day, she'd be servicing the people that she's servicing and seeing the changes that she's seeing. And I love sitting in the wake of that and watching it because it is extraordinary to see people, their changes, their transformations. And that's what this business delivers at the end of the day. So whoever came along would have to buy into that. And it would be an interview with us, with them. If they buy into transformations, changing people's lives at scale, they'd have to prove to us that they can help us do that at scale. It wouldn't be a monetary decision.
All right.
Sure, we.
On that,
that was
point,
a long one. Sorry.
On that point, that's where we end off today's discussion. It has been a great one, just understanding what's happening in the universe of the Lisa Rally Group. Getting an understanding of, you know, the fitness and wellness space, you know, the opportunity that, you know, sits inside there. It's, you know, very fast growing market, you know, from everything that, you know, we heard just now, you know, after the likes of tech that we, you know, often think of, with big growth, this is, apparent in area, that is, receiving a lot of attention, you know, especially on the consumer side, people trying to improve, themselves, improve their lives, improve their nutrition, improve, you know, their businesses, a lot of, outcomes out there. But, you know, in terms of putting a business model around it, you know, Lisa has done it in a number of ways. She said this is a business that's been around since about the year 1999.
Yeah.
And, you know, once upon a time, it was, you know, one interaction at a time from what it sounds like it. And then, you know, going into the media, TV, Biggest Loser, all of that. And then creating, you know, the products, the nutrition around it, the athleisure. We spoke quite a bit about, you know, valuations. We are a business platform, but in that valuations discussion, it was very fascinating to understand what's actually driving, you know, this business. You've got three, what seemed like three disparate businesses, but, you know, interlocking together, you know, to create this ecosystem, you know, that no longer carries the Lisa Rally, you know, brand, but, you know, actually has those three different brands. And also understanding the strategy that is being used, whether it's in Johannesburg, in Cape Town, whether it's the United States or the UK, you know, what are the entry points? You know, what does the research say, you know, this market needs? And then they go in, you know, with all of that, and they can either go in with all three, or they can go in with one, they can go in with two, depending on what's happening. And then at the end, we spend quite a bit of time talking about the international expansion, the opportunities that they see. And, you know, I think the two main takeaways for me is firstly, how different the cultures in the UK and the United States are in terms of spending, in terms of working out, in terms of online versus, you know, actually in person. And then, you know, at the end there, I liked what Stafford said to say, you know, when you're a South African business, you don't go after the US, you go after one state. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you eat the elephant one bite at a time. So that's been it. It has been a really great discussion. We were in conversation with Lisa Rally as well as Stafford Macy, and they are the team from Lisa Rally Group.
Thanks,
team.
Madiwa.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us, Mike.
Thanks for having us.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So, for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.